You're listening to Scarves Around the Funnel, brought to you in association with Forest Hepburn and McDonald's Signs.
Getting noticed isn't always easy, because there's so much noise.
But at Forest Hepburn and McDonald's, we make it easy. With standout signs, business cards, shop fronts, banners, leaflets, vehicle graphics, the lot. Showcasing your products, advertising your brand, and getting business noticed. So, what can we do for you? Forest Hepburn and McDonald's, creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. Visit fhmcdsigns.co.uk.
Kingsley rolls to the boys. Back to Kingsley. Curls it twice. Lovely effort.
2-0!
No! Kingsley magic!
Hello and welcome to Scarves Around the Funnel, the podcast dedicated to Heart of Midlothian Football Club. It was a blustery weekend of football for us to chat about this week. The Paisley Saints hope to blow Hearts away with Starman Shanklin missing, but the men in maroon were almost set to breeze past the buddies before the winds of change seemed to be swirling through Paisley, only to be dashed by Aberdeen FC's favourite addition to Scottish football, VAR. Joining me today is someone whose wind we know all about on this podcast, and the podcast knows all about his wind, Mark Donaldson.
I was going to start. Okay. Play the sound effect.
Oh, excuse me.
Right, that wasn't me. You'll say it was me. McGowan will say it was me. Scott will say it wasn't me. I have nothing to do with that. That's easy. You just go into Google, you put fart noise, and then it's easy. Nothing at all to do with me. I was actually going to talk about climate change, because everybody else seems to be talking about climate change. My grass is waterlogged, but my next-door neighbour's lawn is in perfect condition. But that's climate change.
Is this a euphemism? Oh, no, okay, wait, sorry. We're talking literal?
Come on. This is the same club that fucked up the whole vote and said it was spam folder, and then did you vote, maybe? Come on. They should be chucked in with, I was going to say Bonnerig Rose in the juniors, but I'm kind of like 2 years out of date with that as well. Come on. What is happening in Scottish football? Today's been statement upon statement. The only statement I would want to release from Scarves Around the Funnel is to say that after a wonderful, wonderful result of the weekend, we have the wonderful Ryan McGowan back on the podcast. And you know what, Laurie? Normally it's you that intros him. But because you said I farted, I'm going to intro Ryan McGowan. Hello, Gouser. How was your weekend?
It was very good, actually. It was very, very good. A great weekend for the podcast, wasn't it, to be honest? Carlsberg did weekends. It was right up there.
Yes. You were loving it on Saturday. So, tell you, we'll talk about the game. But, well, I guess start first up, get it right up, Harry and Brandon. sons of the podcast. Unfortunately, Scott is not feeling 100%, so he's missing out today, but he'll be getting it right up them as well. So hopefully that'll start the winds of change in the sons of Scarves Around the Funnel and their allegiances.
Yes, hopefully. Although Harry ignored my phone call on Saturday night, so I think he was a little bit disappointed in that, but no, first of all, it was a huge result for us. It was a huge 3 points. And secondly, it's always nice to go there and win and get one over them. So it's getting a little bit of dog's abuse at the start. And then
By who? Was anyone there? like empty stands in the clips I saw.
To be fair, they weren't too happy with Hibs. Not all is rosy there, which is... You know, I've spoken about it before with like the Tynecastle crowd, and you know, sometimes the bigger clubs, when they're playing at home, they can get onto their own players' backs, and it was definitely one of those feels of the fans were quite quick to get onto the players' backs, and that gave us a little bit of an advantage. And like I said, most importantly, it was a huge result for us, and one that hopefully we can get pick up another one at the weekend and sort of move out of that playoff zone as such.
Did you steal any yards from throw-ins?
No, it was centre back of a well, right centre back. So I only had one or two throw-ins. I took my time at one, which was we'd just gone 2-1 up, and I got one, and that's always good because you could just, like I've said before, you just see grown men just losing their brain because you're taking an extra couple of seconds.
Have you ever done it in front of the West Stand at St Mirren Park?
Oh, they're lively.
Yeah, is that opposite the dugouts? Is that the West Stand?
The other side, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm normally right back. It's quite tasty in that little corner, isn't it?
They are absolutely mental, and I have to say, so they're lunatics. I mean, they will just scream and bay for everything, and they're so angry. I said this earlier in the season, it's the only time in the over a decade I've been commentating that I have stopped speaking, put myself on mute, taken off my headset to have words with the fans below us when they were 1-0 up, and Atkinson was down and was about to get stretchered off, and they were all just going red in the face, shouting abuse. Yeah. And I couldn't work out why they were so angry. But I have to say, despite that, I mean, the other side of it is, it does add to the atmosphere, and it does add a little bit of, just adds a little bit more to the game, I think, when you're there. And I said this to Rob at full time, we'll get to the Hearts game, but they were 2-1 down in added time. And I think at Tynecastle sometimes, if we're 2-1 down at the end, it's just the impatience and everyone getting on the back of the Hearts players. But they were right behind St Mirren trying to urge them on. Thankfully, didn't work out, but it can, does have a bit of an impact sometimes on games. So they have their place, even if they're off their nut at times. In terms of your game, though, Ryan, we're talking about that just now. Tell us about Craigie. Before the game, after the game, what was he like? We know he does love a game against Hibs.
He doesn't say too much before the game, so it's mostly Andy Kirk that kind of goes through it. He was just more emphasising the point of, you know, if we stick to our game plan, was kind of not soak up the pressure as such, but because they do try and play quite expansive football, that we were playing two up front. If we could get one or two passes, basically like the second goal, if we could get one or two passes and then get, you know, Adama running down the wings on the outside of their centre backs, then we'll create chances and be able to get up the pitch and sort of get control of the game in their back half. And it worked out perfectly. And I think in the first half we had created a couple opportunities that we maybe didn't make the right decisions. You know, when you kind of go through, it was, you know, maybe cutting it back too quickly, or we're losing the ball. And he was pretty amped up before the game, and then after the game, you could just tell that he was so buzzing that it just meant that little bit more. And after the game, he's like, "Oh, fucking love winning here. It's no better feeling than winning here," because he was obviously, he took a little bit of heat off me getting it on the sidelines. So, and then his interview afterwards was quite good. So, overall, it was a massive result for us at this stage of the season. And probably for us too, it was that little bit sweeter with our Hearts connections.
Yeah, I enjoyed one of the Hibs.net posts. That scene. I have to say, I do enjoy a bit of Schadenfreude. If I know there's been a bad result for Hibs, or a bad moment, just quickly go and open Hibs.net, go to the match thread and find the moment it happens. It's like you can like kind of relive it. In the same way that if it's been a great moment for Hearts, I quite like to go and kick back and you look at the moments where that happened and you see all the reactions. But there was the one that I sent to you, which was Hendo Delivered, who posted at 3:41. It'll be 4:41 PM. This is effing embarrassing. Had a bad feeling before that ball was whipped in. I actually thought that cretin McGowan would get on the end of it. Horrendous.
That would have topped it off if I scored. That would have been very good.
You know, I looked at your record since you've been back in Scottish football, you enjoyed St Johnstone. So two games against Hibs you've played in this season, won them both. Yeah. Three games last season, won one, drawn one, and lost one. So just one defeat in five since you've been back, and three victories in there. That's pretty good considering, you know, you've been at a team that have been kind of the wrong end of the table, and Hibs have been mid-table to top half.
Yeah.
In that time.
Yeah, even this season, I didn't play in the first game, but you try and work out sort of coming up to the split. You basically play everyone three times. You sort of want to be in the positive side, if that makes sense, of the teams like in and around you. And yeah, to get 6 points off Hibs is pretty good. But then at the same time, I think we have lost all three against Dundee. So, you know, like that's a team that's in and around you. Yeah. You don't want to be doing that. But yeah, we do actually have even St. Johnstone as a club have a pretty good record against Hibs probably over the last 10, 15 years, which is good.
I was going to ask, do you think you'll be playing them again, Hibs, in the bottom six? But we're not going to find that out until Dundee against Rangers eventually takes place 4 years from now when the pitch is eventually playable.
Oh, no. I don't know, you know. I personally think that they'll probably be in the bottom six purely because I just think they had to beat us at the weekend to give themselves any opportunity. They're now going to Fir Park and Motherwell's had a great win at the weekend. They'll be full of confidence, and also it's out of both of their hands if Dundee get a win against Aberdeen. So yeah, they're going to need a few things to fall in their favour to sneak into that top six. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Dundee game getting called off and what the repercussions are of that.
Laurie, have we got any interest at all in a fourth derby this season?
I find it a hard one to call, and also, you know, my main instinct is to want Hibs to fail and not get into the top six, which is exactly what Hibs would feel. Hibs fans would feel like if it's the other way around, but part of me as well, you know, I think you suggested in one of our chats in WhatsApp, you know, Nick Montgomery staying at Hibs may come down to whether they get top six or not. Similarly to last season, where I think the result at the end of the season where we drew with Hibs, I think maybe just kept Lee Johnson in a job. And if we hammered Hibs last game of the season, they maybe may have got rid of him. But they drew, so they did finish below us, but wasn't the worst result in the world. And I think that set them back this season, because they then had to start the season with Lee Johnson, never going to work, and they had to make a change. I'm not convinced by what I've seen under Hibs, under their Nick Montgomery reign. So I kind of want them to have Nick Montgomery for next season, rather than actually have a pre-season to prepare with maybe a new boss. So if it came down to it, if it came down to Nick Montgomery goes, they get bottom six, or he stays and they get top six, right now I probably think that would be better for us as an opponent. Fourth derby, I'm not so sure, because we're usually terrible after the split, and it'd be Easter Road, and with the last derby we did all right. We won the previous one to that, so we're not being beaten by them this season, albeit it's disappointing that we drew two at Tynecastle. So, not sure. Let's just have them in the bottom six. Fuck it.
Okay.
But in terms of records, before it is a Hearts podcast, you know, decent record against Hibs since you've been back. Five games against Hearts, though.
I knew you were going to bring that up. I knew.
Lost five.
Well done, Adrian McGowan. Good lad.
That's, you know, people talk about Hearts get accused of bottling it when they play Rangers and not being too bothered. I mean, McGowan, when he comes up against Hearts.
I also feel like they always play better against us. I don't know why that is. I probably, when I was at Hearts, didn't have a great record against St. Johnstone, so maybe I'm the common denominator there. But yeah, I think the first season, we had it was like 3-2 both games, I think, if I remember correct.
Yep. Yeah, there was probably the 3-2
both games.
There was the 2-3-2 games. You missed the 3-0 bumping. You were up beside me doing St. Johnstone.
I was, I was wondering why I couldn't remember that one. I was injured for that one. Yeah, they comfortably won that day. So, I've probably kept them in it if we're looking at this statistically, isn't it?
Well, then you. Your record was mixed against St. Johnstone when you were a Hearts player. Apparently, it was 3 wins.
I'll tell you one. I remember one. I think it was the start of the 2000s. 2012 season, I could have been sent off after a couple of minutes because I elbowed Callum Davidson.
Did he remember that?
Yeah, I remember it.
Yeah? So remember, did he remember it when he was your manager?
No, but the day that I signed, the bloody media guy pulled up the picture and it's just me elbowing him right across the...
Sorry, Gaffer.
Right across the chops. But yeah, it was one of those ones that kickoff gets set back to the centre back. He flicks it up the channel and I've just come across Callum and yeah, I remember, I think I got booked, but it could have been a red. That would have been a great start to the season.
See, if you told me this story and it was Stephen McLean, I might have thought there'd been like a really long-lasting grudge that, since
I don't imagine
didn't
that.
Get much of a game under the next boss. But Callum Davidson actually gave you plenty of football, so it wasn't that. Anyway, it's not Scars.
Not Farmer
Tractors.
FM.
Yeah, oh, look at that. We thought of the similar kind of joke at the exact same time.
Yes.
It is going to be a Hearts podcast, so we'll move on. We'll chat about St Mirren against Hearts. We're going to speak about music that you love or hate because of football. So we'll get a few suggestions that we've had on Twitter for that, and we'll maybe have time to look ahead briefly to Heart of Midlothian against Livingston this weekend. You're listening to Scarves Around the Funnel, sponsored by Forest Hepburn and McDonald Signs, who have been offering creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. Okay, so St Mirren Park, Smisa Stadium, whatever you call it these days, was the location at the weekend for St Mirren against Heart of Midlothian in the Cinch Premiership. We'll have a quick listen back to the best of the action now.
Penalty. He's given a penalty kick. So Grant steps up, yes. Down the middle and scores.
Get in there, Georgie.
Fourth of the season for George Grant, his third from the penalty spot. And Heart of Midlothian lead 12 minutes before the break. St Mirren 0, Heart of Midlothian 1.
This one in, swinging left. Footed one here, Cochrane whips it in, decent ball, it's cleared,
oh,
it's pinging around
in
the box.
That is going
and
on.
I think it is over the line. And Heart celebrate a second goal here. Great touch and curled into the box, volleyed away by the substitute Mark O'Hara. Then Bakisa get caught under that one, now the chance for St Mirren. Olasanya in on goal, 1-1. Chance for Saints. Olasanya still going, and he scores. Quick break from Saints, and Olasanya drags his side back into the game. Dixon Lembakisa got caught under it a little, and Olasanya dashed through, and he kept his composure. And left-footed, he sent it into the bottom right corner for his sixth of the season. And it's game on in Paisley. St Mirren 1, Hearts 2.
Right, so Saints in fifth against Hearts in third. Hearts without a win in three visits to this ground, but they did win both games here a couple of seasons ago under Robbie Nielsen. St Mirren only with one win of the last four, but they had won three of the last four home games. Hearts without winning two, but just two defeats in 18, and they'd won eight of their previous 10 away matches. Hearts starting this game without Benny Beningame and Lawrence Shankland, both unwell. Kai Rolls and Cammy Devlin coming in. A 3-5-2 for Hearts. Clark in goals. Kingsley, Kent and Rolls at the back. Lembakisa right, Cochrane left. Devlin and Tate sitting. George Grant just a little bit ahead in a more number 10 role. And Fargas and Forrest in attack. So this is a game, Mark, we're not going to do a huge amount of analysis of specific moments, bar the big ones, because it wasn't really a game for the purists, as they say, was it? It was a windy day, and they often talk about this being the worst type of conditions for a football game, especially as a spectacle.
The word ugly is used usually not in a very nice way. This is what this game was. It doesn't deserve us to spend much time, as you've quite rightly said. But it's the weird thing is about an ugly win, it's very satisfying, especially when it's a tough place to go and all that usual BS. Without Shankland, without Beningame, Lembakisa right wing back, there's a lot of kind of shudder when the team lineups came. To come away from there And the conditions were awful, windy and all things like that. It was just get your 3 points and get the hell out of there. And that's a massive win. It was a needed win. It was a horrible game. Do I want to play more games like that without Shankland and without the spine of the team? No, but that'll do. Ugly, ugly win, but beautifully ugly.
Ryan, what is it like when you're out there playing in conditions like that? I know you obviously wouldn't have seen the full game. You've seen the
Ryan,
highlights
what is it,
of it
like when you have problems with wind?
why is it? Because I hear footballers often saying, you know, you can look at really poor pitches, torrential rain, all sorts, but there's nothing quite as bad as wind in terms of what you have to deal with.
I think wind's sometimes the hardest one to do because it just affects everything. Even as a centre back, it's like goal kicks, first half, second half, can, you know, like the wind can catch you, it can go over you, it can go under you, crosses. If it's really windy, it does affect you probably more than people possibly think, or, you know, punters think. And it's just one of those ones where it's just so, the swirling one's the worst. And then the goalie decides just to do a big up and under. And as a centre back, you stand under at the halfway line watching it swirl about. And you've got a big striker coming charging straight at you. So I don't particularly like the wind, and it was quite windy at Easter Road, actually. But yeah, it's just, it's the old saying, it is the best for both teams, but yeah, it is a lot more difficult to play when it's super windy, and it does sort of throw you off a lot with, you know, crosses and long balls, because you can kind of get caught under it or get caught over it.
Yeah, I think in the first half, although the wind was swirling quite a bit, it was more in St Mirren's favour, but it actually was working against them. They were trying to play some long balls over the top, but it just kept getting carried in the wind and going out of play. So it was actually going too long, whereas when Hearts were playing forward, although it was hanging up, it meant the ball was kind of staying live more often. So I think Hearts adapted a lot better, and I thought in the first half they did well to deal with the conditions. I thought Frankie Kent was fantastic throughout the game. I thought Kai Rolls was at his best, and I don't know if you've maybe seen this from him as well, Ryan. What I really like about Kai Rolls, when he's on his game and he's confident, he's just so aggressive. And he did it a few times where he just sees a moment and a player thinks he's got an extra second to let the ball come to him, and suddenly Kai Rolls nips in and steals it away from him. I really like that about him when he does that, because Frankie Kent will tend to sit a bit more, and Kai Rolls just steps out, robs defenders of the ball, and I think it's a really effective way of defending, especially when you need players to kind of step out of a back three and then get you on the front foot. In addition to that, you know, I thought there was a lot of solid play from Hearts all over the field, but I thought George Grant was fantastic in there, and he was very much needed in terms of someone who was getting into those pockets of space to maybe create for Hearts, getting on the ball a little more in a game which wasn't the best to look at. The big moment came just past the half-hour mark. Kenneth Vargas had a shot that was blocked. Now, from our view in the back of the West Stand, unfortunately, internet is not available there, which meant we did not have any replays. It was hard to tell what the delay was and what the VAR check was initially. Obviously, when you see a replay, hand is up. Mark, what do you think of this call? Penalty's given after review. Alan Muir pointed to the spot after he looked at the screen. Obviously, then you get the anger from the St Mirren stands, albeit no one, including Rob Borthwick and myself had really seen it again. What do you feel? I think when I saw it, I was like, yeah, that's going to be a penalty these days, even if it maybe would be seen as a bit harsh.
I think that sentence sums it up perfectly, the phrase "these days." That's clear cut. The way that the laws are written right now and the way that the game is officiated, that is a penalty. Now, if that was against us, would we have liked it? No. But it is what it is. It's the way that the laws are written. Nothing to do with anything else. It's a simple one. That is a textbook penalty kick. Should it have been proximity and everything like that? It's a bit of a nonsense. No one appeals for it. Well, that doesn't mean it's not a penalty. But when something like that happens, the way that the laws are written and the way that games are officiated these days with the handball, that's a penalty. And I'll take it.
What do you feel, Ryan? As a defender, Would you feel hard done by that kind of handball? I think these days with the rules and for consistency, that's always going to be given as a penalty, but you know, it's a yard or two away. Would you feel hard done by, do you think?
I think, like you guys said, you do feel hard done by, but you just see them constantly given that you there's not too much you can actually moan about, because that's just the way it is at the moment, is that if your hand is out of your body, it doesn't particularly matter how close or how far or how much you shot. The chances are once VAR looks at it, they will stop it, they will review it, and most likely they'll give you a penalize you for it. So it's just one of those ones that people are just going to have to get used to, and it does make defending a lot more difficult, because you are probably more concerned about keeping your arms in than you are about trying to stop the ball and trying to get your sort of body on the line. You don't see that, you know, the classic body on the line anymore, because everyone's petrified that, you know, if someone shoots and it goes off target and it hits your hand, then you're probably going to get penalized for it, and it's going to be a penalty. So I just think it is one of those ones that as soon as it does hit your hand and it's out with your body, chances are it's going to be a penalty.
Yeah, the irony is that players are having to make their bodies unnatural as could be by forcing your hands behind your back, which is not what you would do if you were naturally moving around and playing a sport. But there you go. So halftime, Hearts with a lead thanks to George Grant's penalty. Second half, Stephen Kingsley not out for the second period, Toby Sibbick on at the break. Hearts doubled their advantage in the 62nd minute, and Alex Cochrane corner curled in. Again, we were a little in the dark about the final touch when we were up in the commentary area, but it was a Mikael Mandron own goal in the end, forced it over the line. So Hearts certainly benefiting from the conditions to go two ahead, and I thought they were decent value. 6 minutes later, a Saints counter got them back in it. This is one, Mark, where I know you highlighted him before. I actually thought Dexter Lemekisa had a decent first half. I thought he'd put in a few good challenges. He was looking fairly solid, and I think when you're right wing back, you can get away with Dexter Lemekisa a little bit more just now. He's still young, he's still raw, he's good going forward. We know we've got question marks defensively. Those question marks were certainly at the forefront for everyone with this St Mirren goal, weren't they? You've got to say that, you know, conditions weren't the best with any balls going in the air, but he didn't really cover himself in glory, did he?
No, and this is where I would like to defer to Ryan. When your team is 2-0 up, and you're basically in preventative mode, so if you have an attack, maybe take one or two less to attack than you did, and just make sure you keep the back door closed. And if there is a transition, if there is giving the ball away like there was, and then one ball forward, Hart shouldn't have been in that position, whether it was Lembekisa or whoever it was. We got caught short at the back. That shouldn't really been the case, Ryan. And from the case of a defender, do you defend differently, regardless of how you've been asked to set up, if you've got a multi-goal lead, because you know that it's more important to keep that multi-goal lead than to increase it?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, certain managers have different things. You know, Craig Levein, for example, he is huge on us as centre-backs not having a striker free. Like, that is his biggest bugbear. Like, he'll stop videos and be like, Gallagher, Andy, Gordy, like, look at yous. Yous are 5 yards off the striker. If the ball breaks to him, they've got the opportunity to turn and to run at you. So he's very much, you know, that's something that he gets on it. Naismith might not be. They'll probably look at that video and think we should have been a lot better in many different areas in terms of what's happening when the ball is moving forward. Should that be, you know, his fault? Should somebody be in front of him so he doesn't let the ball bounce? There's loads of different things that probably didn't work out. Again, the wind, you know, he might have thought initially when the ball was kicked that the ball was going to come straight to him, it was going to come backwards. There's so many different variables in it, but I think at the end of the day, they probably need to defend it better, not only him personally, but Hearts as a team, to stop that.
The big moment before the end of the game came with about 7 minutes to go, substitute McMenamin into the box. Aidan Denham was tracking him, seems to pull out the challenge, but McMenamin hits the deck, and no penalty given initially by referee Alan Muir, but VAR Andrew Dallas believes there is something for him to look at, sends him over to the monitor. At this point, Mark, obviously, again, we didn't have any replays, so we were largely just waiting for the decision. Our feeling was, as soon as he gets sent to the monitor, tends to be at least 9 times out of 10, probably more. I think Rob said 95% of the time, the ref goes with the decision of the VAR, or the suggestion of the VAR, at least, to overturn his original decision. But on this occasion, Alan Muir stuck with his guns, said no penalty. How do you feel about this one? Because we got a few Hearts fans saying, right call. But we did get some Hearts fans telling us we got away with one there.
There you go. And you can't say, well, it's somewhere in the middle, because it's not. It's either the right call or it's not. So I watched the game back. I was actually driving it, and I had it on in the car, had your commentary on at the car. And on the way back from work, I kind of thought, it's very rare that a referee, after he's been sent over to the to have another look, decides he's gonna stick with his original decision. But then you see it again, you see the angles, and what's basically happened here is that Alan Muir has told the video assistant, because look, he's got the final say. When he's called over, finally over he goes. But he's basically matched up with what he has seen compared to what's actually happened. And when that's the case, then that's the right decision, because the referee said, right, this is what I saw. This is what I saw Denham do. This is what I saw the St Mirren player do. And if that's matched up perfectly with what has actually happened, which it has in this instance, then the decision is keep the on-field decision. And I'm glad, because sometimes, and we've had Des Roach on this show a couple of times, and they've been speaking about, if there's a more of an experienced VAR official and a rookie referee, and they suggest to come over and have another look, there could be that pressure on them from the more experienced referee. But in this instance, Alan Muir, the referee, Andrew Dallas, the assistant or the video assistant referee, do I think it's a penalty? What side are we on here? I mean, if it's against us, what do we think? If that's in the Hearts box and a St Mirren player does that, do we want a penalty? Yes, we do. I think it's probably just the right decision there, because Aidan Denham is not really done that much wrong. And it's the whole who instigates contact. We've seen that a couple of times this week, haven't we? We've seen it with Fabio Silva in the Old Firm game. We've also seen it last night with Bukayo Saka. I'm pretty content with the decision, because it went with us. But if it had gone against us, I'm sure I would have seen it a different way.
Yeah, and I think the thing I always mention as well is contact does not make it a foul.
That's correct.
Either. The contact has to be contact that sends a player down, whether that's enough to... I know sometimes when someone's moving at pace, it doesn't take much. But at the same time, if someone's already going over and then their leg's clipped, Kyogo Furuhashi is the master of this kind of throwing himself over someone rather than being fouled. So I think it's one of those, for me, that if the referee had given a penalty initially, I don't think he's overturning it. I don't know if I think it's one of those. I don't know if you agree, Ryan. It's not clear enough from that replay, I would say, that you could decisively say it's one way or the other, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I totally agree. I think if he'd given it, I don't think he would have changed his mind. And I think went against us a couple of weeks ago, but I always feel the referees, when they do get called over to VAR, they instantly think, oh, I've made a mistake, I'm going to have to rectify this. I like when they say, well, this is what I've seen, this is what I think's happened. Show me enough proof to change my mind. And I think that's probably what's happened. He probably feels that the player's gone down too easily or been looking for it as such. And then he's obviously seen it and he's agreed with his on-field decision and kept it. So it's like you said, it's gone in Hart's favour. You can see both sides of it. And I think, again, this is one of the reasons why people don't like VAR, is because you shouldn't even be having that conversation of, oh, he went to check this or he went to check that. People probably just prefer talking about the ref made a decision and that's what he's kept with, instead of this whole somebody in VAR thinks it's different, so he's actually had to go check it. Because St Mirren fans, for example, will be thinking, well, there's a couple of refs sitting in the VAR room who think he should be given a penalty, so why does this ref not think it? You know, and that's where it becomes messy for fans. And even like what you guys said, you're sitting in the stadium not knowing what they're checking, what they're looking at. You know, it could be anything that's happened. You've seen loads of things that have been off the ball. Even the Old Firm game at the weekend, it's a tackle that happened, you know, 10, 15 seconds before the goal scored. So I think they do need to fix that type of thing up. And yeah, who knows? Maybe next year all the clubs will just band together and get rid of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think both of you hit the nail on the head with things you've said there. I think the referee's had a look at it and he's not seen anything that's new to him in terms of what he saw the first time. And I think that's what they should do, like you say, Ryan. It should be a case of, okay, they should be sent over if the person in the VAR room thinks you've missed something here, you've made a mistake. Not my interpretation is maybe different than yours, which I think is where we've lost our way a little bit, that you've got people re-refereeing in the VAR room saying, actually, my interpretation of that decision, which is going to be subjective, is different than yours. You go and have a look at it. And the referees then feel under pressure because they think, oh, God, I've got this wrong, apparently, according to them, which I don't think is always the case. So, and I think, you know, I joked about it in the intro, but I think Aberdeen's statement today, which is going off topic slightly, was actually spot on, because at the end of their game against Livingston, as funny as it is that Aberdeen had their winner chalked off, a goal was given in normal time and by the assistant watching it. It went to VAR check for offside. The technology to check the offside didn't work, but they didn't just go with the on-field decision, which looks like it was the correct one. They decided to take a punt at looking at the still, and it looks like they got it wrong, which is complete waste of time for everyone. So actually, I don't say it often, but fair play, Aberdeen. I actually thought your statement was pretty good, even if the fact your goal got chalked off was mildly amusing. I think that probably brings us about to the end of it, talking about this game. The only thing I want to touch on, Mark, is obviously we're hoping Shanklin will be back ASAP. Interestingly though, in this game, Hearts had less possession. They don't normally. You normally look at 60% plus for Hearts. They had about 40% in this game. They came away as winners. I wonder if actually not having Shankland in this particular game with these conditions helped, because obviously what we get from Shankland a lot is he drops in, he wants to get the ball, he wants to get possession in his feet, he wants to try and create. Wasn't really a game for this, whereas we just had Vargas, especially Forrest up there as well, doing his bit of running. Vargas, I thought, was slightly more effective running in behind, but it was a game for players trying to run in behind, wasn't it? It wasn't really a game for Shankland.
Also wasn't a game to spend too much time talking about whether Shankland would not have been that. So, yeah. Hearts won. Move on.
Okay, fair enough.
Forrest Hepburn and MacDonald have been making creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. For more, visit fhmcdsigns.co.uk.
Okay, so last couple of episodes we mentioned songs and their relation to football. And are there songs out there that you particularly like because of football, Hearts memories you think fondly of, maybe a song that was played at the time, or we had a chant that was related to it, or songs that you just don't like anymore because of this, the same reason, or because the opposition chanted along to that tune or played that music at certain moments. So we've got a few messages, so I'm going to go through some of these, and some obvious ones, but there's some interesting ones here as well. So Connor Radish says Marshall's the Chunky Chicken Champions, of course. Yeah. Some of the obvious dislikes are X says anything by the Proclaimers. Craig says I'd say anything by the Proclaimers, but they're all shite anyway. Jersey Steve says the obvious one being Sunshine on Leith. Although friend of the show, Stevie Morris, said, I hate listening to Sunshine on Leith, but drum roll, I loved singing it on the karaoke in the tap shop pub full of hibbies on the night they lost the League Cup final to Livy. We did get a few people mentioning, you know, it's kind of childish and people shouldn't dislike songs just because they're associated with another club, which, yeah, fair enough. We're having a little bit of fun. Aaron Fraser mentioned one that we talked about last time, Depeche Mode, Just Can't Get Enough. Plenty of heavy losses to Celtic have ruined a great song, none more so than the 2019 Scottish Cup final. Chelsea Dagger gets mentioned. Joel Sked says Chelsea Dagger, 5-0 loss at Celtic Park, can be thanked for that. Craig also said Chelsea Dagger, simply the best, Just Can't Get Enough. Similar reasons for hating these songs. One that I'm sure Ryan thinks of fondly, HMFC France, says Give It Up by KC and a Sunshine Band for obvious reasons. The tune is a banger, but That Day in May adds so much more magic for me. Now here's a message. I thought I would touch on this because it's a good point actually. So Sam says, I've bit my tongue on this one for years, but Levels by Avicii wasn't playing when we lifted the cup in 2012. Good Feeling by Flo Rida was. Admittedly, I think I played it. It played that day. I always hear people saying it was the cup lifting song, and honestly, I had to get it off my chest. Now, he does have a point, because it was. I don't know, Ryan, I'll have to ask you, since you were one of the men lifting the cup. I don't know if you ever thought about that, or because we do always talk about Avicii Levels, but it wasn't. It was Flo Rida playing. Do you ever think about that particular part of the moment?
No.
No.
No, not at all. I'm sure Avicii Levels came on at a point of like when we're sort of walking around with the trophy. And, you know, when it's like sometimes in the I've only ever experienced it once, to be fair, but it's kind of like people are a bit like, oh, I kind of want to see the players, but kind of don't know if we want to hang about. You know, it's that kind of everyone's almost taking a moment's breath. And I felt that as we were walking around, Avicii Levels came on and it just, like, everybody just started getting right back into proper party mode. And I think that's probably where a lot of people get Levels from, is from that. But also remember, it's going to annoy me because I don't actually remember it, but when we're walking out, it was a good song when we're walking out.
Yeah, so that
one, always.
Yeah, that's the one that gets played quite a bit, and it's Let's Go, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it.
Because that one plays at Hampden quite often.
Yeah,
it's a Calvin Harris one because it was playing. I always think of the 2019 final as well because I'm pretty sure it's playing as the teams come out there. So yeah, it's like Let's Go as a we'll maybe have to get the current Hearts announcer on because he's probably responsible for a lot of these. Yeah, but that plays as well.
Yeah. I think one of the things that's pretty good.
Yeah, I think one of the things with Levels is it's the something like the vocal sample is the same in the Levels version and the Flo Rida version, and I think there was also a kind of mashup version of the track that was released, which is Good Feeling with Levels mixed in as well. But it's one that it is correct, but I think many of us do forget about. And there you go, Sam brought it up, so it's important to recognise that. Ryan, do you have any that, if you don't remember that moment, but any songs that you like or loathe because of football or that you think of, takes you back to certain moments?
Avicii Levels is the one. that's my go-to.
Even though it wasn't playing when you lifted it.
No, but it just reminds you of that time and that being drunk and happy and... I honestly remember, obviously, went out loads afterwards, and as soon as that song came on, would be just like Hearts fans would just swarm the dance floor, and everyone would be buzzing for it. So that's still one of my. As soon as I hear that song, instantly go back to Hampden and all those feelings that come back with it. But that's the one, the football song that, as soon as I hear that, it's the first thing I think of. And you've probably half ruined it for me because then I'll be telling people this wasn't actually the song that was being played when we lifted.
You're going to be that guy.
but loads of my Hearts mates and that. As soon as that song comes on, it's just like, that's it, we're up.
Do you think Paolo, if Casey the Sunshine Band comes on, he's kind of
can
help himself? Paolo Sergio.
Yeah, he'd be singing that. 100%. He probably still has that on his playlist every morning. He gets in and just reminisces.
To be fair, that's what I would do. Captain Jamtart said, obviously love Casey and his Sunshine Band, give it up. Seven Nation Army, White Stripes, Duo by Propaganda. Scott Wilson played it for years. Reminds me of Tynecastle. Hates Depeche Mode, simply the best. That sorrow song, forget what it's called. Ragnar says, Harry J and the All-Stars, Liquidator. If anyone's been to Stamford Bridge, they'll know how much that song means to the Chelsea fans. Even the new blues get it. I wish Radio Hearts and Scott Wilson had adopted it and chanted Jam Tarts at the appropriate time. So there you go. Mostly Hearts, which is Ian, who's obviously been on the show, Ian McIntosh previously, says Carnival de Paris by Dario G. And Shang-A-Lang by the BCRs, both played immediately after certain Scottish
BCRs?
Cup. I'm just reading his message.
Oh.
Yeah,
I've never heard the Bay City Rollers called the BCRs before.
Well, look, I'm like Ron Burgundy. You know, I'm just going to read
the BCRs.
Like, I don't read these beforehand, okay? So I'm just clearly reading them.
When you said that, I was like, I don't think I've ever heard of them, BCR.
BCRs.
To be fair, I didn't really think about it until after I read the message, so...
You really want him for that?
He's got plenty of characters as well. He's used his 140 characters. Could have written basic rollers.
Were you not the one that brought up that? What the hell was that stupid name of that song? Was it This Girl by Kungs versus Cooking on Three Burners? Was that not some association with Hearts?
That's like the one that we chanted Kyle Lafferty to.
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah,
we couldn't have told you sang it. Getting back to normal music, Chain Reaction by Diana Ross was like the theme. It was like the theme song or the track from kind of Christmas time 86 onwards. And I remember listening to going to Hampden. It was played prior to the Clyde Bank game as well. Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Two Tribes, just because Scott Wilson and Gavin Pearson did a mashup of the 2002-2003 Hearts TV commentary of all the goals that we scored against Hibs. And here's one from Carl Fredrickson. Apparently there was a lady who's a Hearts supporter called Mary Sandeman, and she went by the stage name of Anika or Annika, and she reached number one with a song called Japanese Boy. And apparently Japanese Boy was played a lot prior to games in the early 80s. So as someone that didn't go to his first game since 85, is there anyone out there that can remember listening to Annika's or Anika's Japanese Boy? And was she indeed a Hearts supporter? She's from Edinburgh. She's 76 now. But and can we play it? Do we even know what it sounds like? I'm sure Laurie can do his magic.
Why not? Yeah. I feel this is getting into that Sydney Divine territory. Jimmy M says, couldn't stand the Entertainer. I grew up in a tiny village with a rampant hippie family who took great delight in singing 32, 34, 35, etc. years in a row since we'd won a cup. 98 was Sweet Release. Kevin McCann says, you win again. The Bee Gees always played after a win in the 80s, 90s. You win again. It's a story of our away games this season, isn't it? You win again. And Teardrops by Womack and Womack. When I was wee and my dad used to take us to sit in the old main stand family enclosure, I used to always seem to be playing. Makes me have a daft wee smile whenever I hear it. That's from Carolyn Thompson. Yes, I forgot actually talking about You Win Again. Away games. I totally skipped by this. It was even in my notes, just to mention the fact that obviously the away win against St Mirren took us on to 10 away wins in the league for the season. The first time we've done that in a top flight since 1992.
Not bad. What's the next kind of record to aim for, given how bad our form usually is after the split?
Well, one of the interesting things from this, and I realise we've kind of diverted off course from the music, but why not? I meant to mention this earlier, is I was interested, you know, have in terms of have we actually had more wins away from home than at home in a season. Obviously, we've not had 10. We've not had more points away from home since that 92 season than we've won at home. But we did have more wins away from home in 99-2000. We actually had the same amount of points home and away. So this season could be tight in terms of both of those things, because right now we've obviously got two more away wins than we do home wins. So there's certainly a possibility that we'd end the season with more away wins than we would home wins for the first time since 92. Points-wise, that could be slightly different, because at the moment we are, what we are at the moment, we've 29 points at home and we've got 30 away from home. So what do you think, Mark? Do you think we'll end the season with a very rare occurrence of having more points away than we will at home? Or will this Livingston game push us over the edge?
I don't know, but I do know that Ryan McGowan has to go. And every time Ryan McGowan has to go, in previous episodes, he kind of just disappears. Because he's so polite, he doesn't want to interject. So I don't know what you need to go, Ryan, but I just wish to say thank you for your company over the last hour, and Laurie not and I problem. Can discuss.
This is unacceptable. Ryan McGowan was a big part of my Hearts he's Against Livingston preview.
He's so, given us an hour.
Yes, I'm sorry.
I suppose so. Like,
if you hadn't spent that much fucking time talking about St Mirren and
BCR, like, oh,
what do you think, BCR and Lauren Shankler, do you think he would
have made a difference?
No, fine.
It's been a pleasure, fellas.
Thank you, Ryan.
Hey, hopefully it's a good Hearts Saints double next week. Get back on.
Who do you end your top six with?
That's what, you know, top Killy at home. Yeah, let's rub it in.
Oh, you could do us a favour.
Mm-hmm.
You could do us a thank you.
Do right, us well, a favor. We don't need favors. We don't need favors. We do our own. We get on with our own business. I'm only joking. Thanks for coming on, Ryan.
No worries, guys. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Speak to you next week. Bye bye. Can't have me, I'll be the president one day. January 1st, oh, you like that gossip? Like you the one drinking that gossip.com. Now I gotta work for your tongue. How many Rolling Stones you want? Yeah, I got a brand new spirit, speak it and it's done. Woke up on the side of the bed like I won. Talk like a winner, Manchester, that sun. G5 in the US to Taiwan. Now who can say that? I wanna play back. Mama knew I wasn't needle in the haystack. A Bugatti boy, plus Maybach. I got a feeling it's a rap, ASAP. Get a feeling that I never, 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 never had before. No, 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 I get a good feeling, yeah. Right, Dunsir, what was that question about home and away wins? If Hearts win on Saturday, they're still one short, aren't they, of total away wins?
Yeah, I mean, let's not labour it just now. Basically, it's not very common for us to get more points or more wins away from home than at home. So it could be the season that it happens, but you've taken a wind out of my sails on a podcast.
You took the wind out of everybody's sails by asking
about it. I did, didn't I? I did. I'm sorry.
This has been one of your more disappointing performances this week. You're normally pretty good at this, but tell you what, your content today has been, it's been a bit languid.
Okay, well, let's see if anyone else has got some better content for us. Beautiful Sunday, Hearts 4, Hedgehill, 2006. That's Freedom Fighter who says it. It was Archie who said Let's Go by Calvin Harris. Always reminds me of Hampden because they do play it before games. So I do think of it more as 2019. I don't know if it's just because I was more drunk in 2012 that I don't think of the song at the start of the game so much. But I'm not too sure.
I looked it up. There was a thread about this as well on Jambo's Kickback, and I don't know if it's younger people that listen to podcasts and older people maybe post, because a lot of the things were like from the 70s and the 80s. Wolford's Hearts, Howard Jones's new song belting out as Walter Borthwick fired crosses into Henry Smith at the warm-up. Also, Save All Your Kisses for Me by Brotherhood of Man reminds me of games prior to the 1976 Scottish Cup final, says Morgan. Now we're talking. Now we've just welcomed back all the 50 and 60-somethings back into the conversation.
Indeed. Well, Gillian says, I hate Happy Hour by the House Martins. It was playing as I got off the bus in Dundee on that day in 1986. Takes me straight back when I hear it. I think that's one of the points with disliking the songs. I think a few people in the thread said, you know, it's juvenile to not like Claimers, whatever, just because of football. But same with the Depeche Mode song. It's not that I suddenly think that Depeche Mode song is poor, but just can't get enough. It takes me back to the moment I'm just watching the Celtic end bouncing around to it, and it's just a bad memory. So it's same as Gillian talking about that particular song that takes her back to 86.
And as I spoke about Diana Ross's Chain Reaction, David Bowie's Absolute Beginners was another one. And it's funny because When you're a certain age, you don't realize it when you're growing up, but when you look back, there's a certain age that you're the most captive as far as remembering things. And you would think it would be more recent than further away, but no, a lot of the stuff, like just going to your first game. I remember one or two things about my first game where I got dropped off, but just the music as well, the old Panini family enclosure where they used to give out the stickers, and the old guy that used to... I think it was like spearmint chewing gum and tablet they used to sell, all that. It was just so much more innocent. But that stuff, when I was in my formative years, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, before the kind of promotion to the shed on the other side. But the music, it's 85, 86, and music up until about the 90s, I don't know why you don't forget it. And these are things that can, no matter what happens, you can immediately say, right, I remember that song, or I remember that song. And I kind of like that most people have kind of gone down the this is memories. And a lot of the ones are the same for cup finals and various other things. But I love the stories about just random when I was 9, 10 years old, someone saying that this was a song that I liked. Everyone's different. It's like a scent, a smell. The distillery beside Tynecastle, and music as well. Two things very much going hand in hand with the match day experience at Tynecastle.
You're listening to Scarves Around the Funnel, sponsored by Forest Hepburn and McDonald's Signs, who have been offering creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. Last up, let's look ahead to this weekend's big match, Heart of Midlothian against Livingston, the Allan Forest Derby at Tynecastle. Hearts obviously sitting in third, 11 points clear of Kilmarnock. Yes, I may have said 10 last time to who highlighted it, put in my notes somewhere, but sorry, whoever it was who highlighted that. I did say 10 at one point, 11 clear against Livingston, who are rock bottom of the table. Hearts unbeaten in 19 meetings at Tynecastle against Livy, dating back to May 2002. Livingston without a win in 7, losing 5 of those games. Hearts back to winning ways in that last game against St Mirren, and in very good form, especially recently at Tynecastle, their last defeat at homecoming in December. Mark, we're certainly hoping we can continue our winning ways that we got on Paisley. I am looking for a bit of a performance here as well. I would like to see it. Something we can really get behind, see a few goals, and not from the fact that we're desperate for it in the league, but with the semi-final coming up against Rangers, we've seen the press, you know, we know there's quite a few thousand tickets unsold yet, which is disappointing to see. But I think a real statement win here, a big performance, a few goals, I think that would be exactly what we need ahead of a tough trip to Hampden against Rangers.
Yeah. I think I'm right in saying that the last time Livy were at Tynecastle was one of the most, if not the most, negative tactics from an away team Is that right?
They didn't try and attack whatsoever throughout the game.
And what's going to be different about this time? So I think what's going to be different is a Hearts early goal, because they can't do that again. They're in trouble. They're 9 points adrift. Granted, their last five games after this are going to be against the bottom six, so they might have an opportunity. They've certainly got a chance against Ross.
They need to go for wins in games if they've got
any hope. They have to. So I think it'll be a more open game. Can't be any more backs to the wall than that one. 4-3-3 for me. Craig Gordon back in goal. Just build momentum. The reason I say Craig Gordon back in goal, I don't want him going into the Rangers game having not played since Morton. He's training every day. He's frustrated. He just wants to play. Now, depending on what happens with St Johnstone against Kilmarnock, if Hearts win and Killie lose, that's a 14-point gap. And there's only 15 points to play for. And both Killie and Hearts have still got to play the Old Firm. Killie aren't catching Hearts, right? So I don't see why you wouldn't. It's not a case of play the team you play against Rangers. There's no need to in this game, because that would be probably three at the back, although that hasn't worked against Rangers. But is this a game for, I don't know if it's like a Tagawa or something. I'm not going to go stupid, crazy changes, because Tagawa's not going to be involved against Rangers. Is there stuff that we can do in this game looking ahead to the Rangers game? Yeah, I think there is. And that's why I'd have Craig Gordon back in goal to give him some game time under his belt. If we're playing a back four, who the heck are we playing at right back? I don't think it's as big an issue because it's Livingston. It's not Lembekisa. So is it Atkinson or Sibic? If it's Sibic, it doesn't really. You want this to be a game where your fullback is getting forward as much as possible. So it's not the best choice. However, probably Atkinson. Again, it depends. I hope Shanklin's back. Do we play 4-3-3? Do we go 4-4-2? Do we go 4-2-3-1? I just want to see us get bodies forward, get an early goal. And as I think you're right, get a statement win, something that they can turn up on Monday with a smile on their face and go, right, now it's time for Rangers. And while I'm on that topic, if you haven't got your ticket yet for Hampden, the last thing we want is Hearts having to pay for any tickets that haven't been sold when you can pay, if you can afford it, to go. So
you haven't got
your ticket yet. I've paid for mum and dad to go to hospitality. I thought it was a brilliant deal for hospitality.
I'll let you off then. Too many people in hospitality. Buy some of the regular seats.
But it's a ticket. It's a ticket. I think we got the email this week. Mum and dad are in one. I think there's more than 10 buses or something going, which is great. The more the merrier. It's a brilliant deal. I mean, they're concessions because they're over 65. So I think they get 70 quid, I think it costs, per person. And you get a breakfast before you go. You get a welcome drink. You get a ticket. It's fantastic. I'm not saying buy hospitality. I'm just saying if you haven't got your ticket yet, go and get it. And this is a game on Saturday that Hearts should be in a position to boost the confidence ahead of Hampden. Whether or not that happens is another matter. Would you start Craig Gordon, by the way?
Yes. If he's going to play the semi-final, then yeah. I think I would. I think it's a tricky game in terms of, you know, I know what you're saying. Often if you've got a big game coming up, you would maybe use, and you've got a game before it that doesn't have as much importance, there's not as much jeopardy, you would maybe do your best to use that game to, you know, run with the setup that you're going to use. So you've got you can use things in a live action game and maybe tweak things. I think the difficulty is they're so different, those two games. Livingston are going to let us have all the ball. We're going to be on the front foot in possession with our crowd behind us. Rangers are, it's going to be not quite the opposite, but it's not going to be far off in terms of Rangers having the bulk of the ball and Rangers looking to dictate things and us having to do a lot more work off the ball. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's a different shape in both games. It doesn't make sense to, you know, if we're going to play a back 3/5 at Hampden, which I wouldn't be surprised at, it doesn't mean that you'd want to play that same 5/3 against Livingston. But in terms of players who maybe who are maybe not as sharp as others in terms of haven't been playing as much, why not put Gordon in if he's going to play in that semi-final, give him a game to kind of build up some sharpness. I know he's a goalkeeper, so the kind of fitness element's not going to be as big a deal, but certainly the sharpness. I think on the right, I'd probably, although we may play a four and then we may play a 3/5 at Hampden, I'd probably go with whoever I'm going to play on the right, because we've played each, you know, we've played both Atkinson and Limbikisa. I think defensively, you'd probably go with Atkinson, which would suggest maybe that's who we would play against Livingston, just to give them as many minutes beforehand as possible.
Yeah, I think those are different. I'd probably play Atkinson against Livy, but I'd play Sivic against Rangers. I'd go five at the back against Rangers, or 5-4-1, and that would be Sivic as a right back. I'd have Kingsley, Kent, and Rolls, and then Cochrane with four in midfield. I just think we need to try something different against Rangers. But for the Livy game, yeah, I don't think it's a big issue. And if Natty Atkinson can't handle a game against Livingston, then there's bigger problems than we thought.
Okay, we'll see what happens. We'll finish up. What do we think then? Predictions, scoreline, and a goal scorer.
I'm going to go 2-0, and I'm going to go Oda. I think Oda will, nice. Will come, okay. come in from the cold, and I think it's a good opportunity to get him some game time. So that's my left field goal scorer pick. You?
Okay. I'm going for a big one. I think we'll get an early goal, and we're going to get a big result to boost the confidence. I'm going to go with 3-0 Hearts. And I'm going to say Alan Forrest is going to get a goal against his former side and a comfortable win. And we're going to sell 5,000 more tickets based on how impressed everyone is by our performance.
That's like
optimism. We'll be flooding through our veins.
150 grand we'd be liable for if we didn't sell any more tickets. Come on. Let's see if we can. Because this is the other thing. It affects not just this one. And Hearts, I mean, that's the last thing Hearts want. I think Hearts did great when it came to, okay, well, we'll be liable for it because we're pretty optimistic we can sell out of what is going to be Hearts' biggest game of the season. And if they haven't, then it affects things going forward as well, because it's easy for SFA or SPFL, depending on whether the competition is the Scottish Cup or the League Cup, to say, well, hold on here, why do you deserve a split? I mean, say we get through. We somehow get through against Rangers, and we've got Celtic in the final. For me, any final should be a 50-50 split, but you don't want to be in a position to give other teams an argument against you. Oh, remember that semi-final when you promised that you would sell half the tickets and you didn't? Come on, give them no excuse going forward for future games, and do our bit, and let's have 21,000-odd Hearts supporters at the semi-final a week on Sunday.
Well, we'll preview that game next week, and we'll obviously talk about whatever happens in the Hearts Livingston game before then. Until that point, thank you for tuning in. See you soon. Yeah.